Welcome to episode 54 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossnick, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, we're about to kick off another week of baseball. We've got some games actually going on now. We can actually turn on our MLB TVs. I'm pumped. How about you?
I wish my contract would have only called for 50 episodes, Brian.
Well, you know, you have made a horrible mistake in by agreeing to do this podcast with me, and we're going to drag it out. We're going to talk about some of the other minor moves that have been made. We've got a couple of major league deals to talk about, a couple of minor league deals to talk about, but we didn't get lucky with any of the other kind of bigger name free agents. No Mike Moustakas yet, no Greg Holland yet, none of that tier of guys, but we have ones from a tier down or so. So, you know, that's a little bit of a bummer, but it gives us more content to talk about once we get into March and April, I guess.
That's one way to look at it. I would choose to look at it a negative perspective, but fair enough.
I mean, not that we're not going to have enough content at that period when we have the roster shuffles and all the guys getting DFA'd and the late non-tenders, the guys who are tendered contracts who get cut at the last minute. I mean, we're going to have some plenty to talk about in March, I think. But yeah, we got some other stuff to go over today.
Yes, and I cannot wait until we're talking about how many Rule 5 picks certain teams are carrying because, you know, nothing gets the blood pumping quite like a good, honest, cynical as heck tank job.
You know, speaking of cynical as heck tank jobs and the vagaries of early season rosters, you and I before collaborated on those NRI watch columns at Baseball Prospectus. I'm not entirely sure we're going to do one of those this year, but I'm going to throw something at you real quick, and that's do you have kind of like a favorite NRI that you've seen come into a camp so far this season?
You're supposed to say Johnny Venner's here, right? Because, you know, of his backstory and because it'd be pretty cool to see him make that bullpen. And frankly, yeah, you know, you could make that bullpen at this point. So I think he'll make an appearance at some time in the season. Outside of him, it's such a weird winner because a lot of guys are getting NRIs who I didn't expect to get NRIs. For instance, you know, Wade Miley with the Brewers. I know he was awful last season, but you could have easily seen him get a, you know, one-year, $1 million deal with some incentives. Same with Daniel Nava, who was actually really good last season. I don't have a particular favorite, I would say. I don't think I've looked through the NRI list to, you know, be in a position to say that. But, yeah, I guess Johnny Venner's is kind of the default answer, the cheap answer here. But for a good reason, you know, everybody likes a good human interest story, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Johnny Venters, I really thought he was going to be out of the game. I think it's been three Tommy Johns at this point.
He calls it three and a half.
My God. That is even worse. I feel like a half Tommy John surgery is much, much worse than a full one.
I don't even know what a half Tommy John surgery could entail, and I don't want to learn, so.
Yeah, I think that there are so many NRIs, it's certainly not worth going over all or even most of them on this discussion. But I was just looking, and when you talk about Ventners as an NRI in the Rays camp, I think they've got something like 12 or 15 just relief pitcher NRIs because that bullpen is such a garbage fire. It doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, again, podcast concern Chaz Rowe, I'd be looking over my shoulder. Evan Scribner's coming for your job.
Don't say stuff like that, Brian. It scares away the demographic.
Yeah, the ever-shrinking demographic as we talk about NRIs and Rule 5 guys. Let's talk about a different former Ray. Let's talk about, because I assume Chaz Rowe is going to be a former Ray relatively soon. We'll talk about our big move for the week, which involves another former Ray, former Marlin, former Mariner, and now current Minnesota Twin Logan Morrison, who's been inked to a one-year $6.5 million contract. There's, I believe, a vesting option for year two. There's a buyout. So there's the possibility this could be more than a one-year stop in Minnesota. But kind of an interesting landing spot for a guy who we've talked about a lot as, boy, why doesn't Team X or Team Y or Team Z sign Logan Morrison? And now we finally have our answer as to where he's going to end up. And I certainly didn't expect it to be the Twins.
No, I don't think anyone expected it to be the Twins. I thought if the Twins were going to splurge a little bit on the free agent market, it'd be on a different former Ray in Alex Cobb or perhaps even Lance Lynn. That said, this is a nice bit of Craven opportunism, isn't it? Because you just signed a guy who hit 38 home runs last season. He's not yet 30, I don't think. Well, he turned 30 in August. Yes, he is over 30.
It's hard to tell because he doesn't always act like he's 30 years old.
Oh, wow. That's a shot. And the thing is, you know, a lot of attention has been paid to Yonder Alonso and whether his gains last season were sustainable. Lomo has kind of the same thing going on. He really turned his attention to hitting more fly balls. He also pulled a lot more fly balls. So you have the whole launch angle revolution, fly ball revolution, whatever the world the kids are branding it these days. And depending on your belief in that kind of stuff, he's either underrated or he is a house of cards waiting to go all Casey Kochman on someone because, you know, there was a reason Logan Morrison was available for so cheap last offseason. And it wasn't because, you know, the Rays and him have a great relationship or something. It's because prior to 2017, he'd been maybe a guy you would look at as potentially hitting for like the league average, which at first base is not really what you want unless you're, well, the Rays. So
yeah.
I don't know. Do you think this guy is going to come out here in 2018 and is he going to be closer to his 2017 level of performance or his 2016 level of performance? And I ask that knowing darn well that the baseball they use will probably help determine that more than we're able to say.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on all counts there. I would project him to hit closer to his 2017 power and abilities more than his previous abilities. And, you know, my in-depth reasoning for this is because, one, I believe the baseball is going to continue to be pretty much as it was last year. The second reason is that if you're going to be a flyball revolution guy, Morrison kind of has the right profile for that. He is a guy who has in the past, even when he was coming up as a prospect, he kind of always had a really nice hit tool. And it hasn't played up as well in the past as we kind of expected it would. I mean, when he first came up with the Marlins, he was kind of projected to be this 300 hitting guy with power. I would say very similar in profile to what Christian Yelich actually eventually became. And Morrison was kind of looked at to be something in that same vein with maybe a little bit more power. Obviously, it didn't turn out like that, but he has always had pretty decent bat-to-ball ability, plus, a good approach at the plate. So the underlying talent and skills kind of seem to be there and have been there for a while, so I'm a little more hopeful about him going forward than I would have been if this was, you know, somebody like a Freddie Galvis coming out of nowhere with the flyball revolution all of a sudden hitting for power. I'm more likely to see a guy like that regress than somebody with Lomo's pedigree. So I don't expect 38 home runs again, especially in Minnesota, but I think he's probably going to be an above average hitter and maybe a substantially above average hitter next year.
In that case, we should talk about how he fits into the Twins lineup because there's a reason we were a little surprised. And it wasn't just, you know, the financial aspect, because I think we'll both agree this is a very nice deal for the Twins, especially if he is able to retain some or most of those gains, to get him on $6 million for 1 year, potentially 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty sweet deal. So anyway, he is either going to DH with Miguel Sano at third base, or he is going to DH with someone else at third base. Either way, you would think that Morrison will be the DH, maybe share first base with Joe Mauer. And the thing is here, I guess Sano is really the person of interest because he has a lot going against his availability right now.
Yeah.
You start with that investigation into those pretty serious allegations made by a former team photographer. You go to how Sano has apparently showed up out of shape based on some of the comments his general manager made. And, oh, by the way, he's recovering from off-season leg surgery. So there's a lot going against Sano's beginning of season availability. Who knows when he'll be available. So from that perspective, you know, adding another bat at the cost they added, it makes a lot of sense. You know, then that allows you to kind of cover if Sano misses half the season, most of the season, who knows, again, what that suspension can entail. From there, I guess the only guy it really affects otherwise is it knocks Robbie Grossman to the bench, and I think, you know, in an ideal world, Robbie Grossman would probably be a bench player anyway, maybe play, you know, starting a couple times a week. So it seems like it makes their lineup better regardless of what happens, and I guess that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that breakdown. I am very, very nervous about Sano to start the season, but I'm also kind of nervous about Sano going forward, simply because he has proven, first of all, that he probably has some serious makeup issues, and that's probably putting it mildly, not just with the allegations of the assault, but also because he has a tendency to come in a little bit off in terms of weight, and he doesn't necessarily seem to have the best reputation beyond just these allegations. So I'm not always very keen on a guy who has those continued issues, has potential weight issues, has potential injury issues. So the Twins really needed a hedge against him, because I really think that Robbie Grossman isn't enough of a hedge against Miguel Sano missing some or all of the season. Joe Mauer is not the most healthy guy either. There's very strong possibility that he could have concussion issues reoccur. A small injury could turn into a big one with him. And now you've got a very easy replacement for him in Logan Morrison if something ever happened to him. So this is kind of an ideal move, I think. And previously it was going to be Kenny's Vargas as the backup first baseman DH, kind of in this Lomo role. I would say Lomo's like a win or two upgrade over a guy like Vargas. He's definitely going to be a more complete hitter, I think, even if he's on the lower end of his performance. And Vargas is not what I would call a good defensive first baseman by any stretch of the imagination. So this is definitely an upgrade for a team that I think needed a little bit more depth to really try to compete in the American League Central and the American League wildcard race. But they still don't have any pitching.
Yeah, and I was going to touch on that next, because their offseason, if you look at it, it's actually been, I think, pretty good. They signed Lomo, they traded for Odorizzi, signed Fernando Rodney, Addison Reed, who I actually had forgotten all about until I saw him in the spring game this year. They also signed Zach Duke and Michael Pineda, although obviously his availability for the season is up in the air. And, you know, they signed Anibal Sanchez as well. We talked about that, I believe it was last show. So, you know, the only thing missing is really getting that extra starting pitcher who will make this rotation look significantly better, I think. If they were to add a Lynn or a Cobb, then you're talking about Barrios, Odorizzi, Gibson, the mystery man, and then probably Sanchez, I would guess, because, you know, I would assume they're going to roll with him entering the season no matter what, just to give him a look. And then you have Urban Santana coming back at some point. You have some of your options in the minors, whether it's Gonsalves or Ramiro or even Sagers. I don't know. You know, you have Tyler Duffy as well. I don't know if they would move him back to the rotation, but they have some options. They're not necessarily great options, you know, but there's enough depth there that you could see them getting through a season just fine. It's just they need to go out there and get a Lynn or a Cobb. And it feels like them and Milwaukee should just split those guys, you know, do a raffle. One of them gets Alex Cobb, one of them gets Lance Lynn, and then we're settled. And maybe one of them even gets Jake Arrieta if they're really feeling dangerous. But on paper, this looks like the second best team in the American League Central, perhaps by far. It looks like a team that can realistically compete for a wild card spot. I know Bakota is a little bit more down on them than you or I might be. I think they're in like the high 70s or very low 80s. And I think this team could potentially compete for that wild card spot as built right now. But I definitely would like their chances more if they were to add a Cobb or a Lynn.
Yeah, I think that the AL Central kind of secretly is almost as bad as the National League East, when we were talking about before with some teams, you know, the Mets being able to compete in the National League wildcard race because their division is so bad. You and I were talking before the show about how bad the Tigers are. They don't look like they're going to field a full major league roster. The White Sox are obviously kind of rising, but they're also probably still not good yet. And the Royals, yeah, I don't feel very good about the Royals at all. So that's three teams that I would expect are going to probably top out at like 75 wins this season at the best. And the Twins can really vulture a bunch of extra wins that way. I would be looking towards the deadline to see if they could make an aggressive move at the deadline, perhaps. But yeah, the way it's going right now, I do like their offseason moves, even though, you know, adding like a bunch of 2016 Tampa Bay Rays doesn't always seem like the best offseason strategy, but they do look better than they did last season. It's just, you're absolutely right, they need another starter.
Yeah, just to illuminate the Tigers' woefulness, if you're out there, play along. Guess who the Tigers' projected second baseman is? Pencils down, it's Dixon Machado, who is known as a glove-first shortstop, which tells you this team is just not – they have like four or five big leaguers in their lineup. They have Mike Fiers and Francisco Liriano in their rotation. They're going to be really, really bad, and that's not – they're not even probably the worst team in the division, because the Royals somehow combine the awfulness of, let's say, you know – well, let's just put it this way. They have a horrible – big league team, and they have one of the worst farm systems in baseball as well. So it's not like you can say, well, you know, they're bad, but they have some kids on the way who can help change things like you can with the White Sox. No, there are no kids on the way here. The kids are gone. The kids are in San Diego now and in other bigger markets, it seems like, you know, but Bert Smith, he's going to be interesting. So I guess if you're a Royals fan, you take pleasure in knowing that you have guys like Bert Smith and Willie Peralta and Jesse Hahn to watch as they try to resurrect their careers as relievers, because those guys can be interesting. Other than that, holy smokes, go watch the World Series DVD instead of watching this team, because it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I mean, and if we think it's pretty bad just from an independent observer's standpoint, if you look at Pecota, the two worst regulars projected by Pecota are Nick Castellanos and James McCann, who are the 5 and 6 hitters for the Tigers. You know, their bench is basically consisting entirely of NRI and Rule 5 guys at this point. It's a real serious disaster with this team. And I mean, I like Franklin Perez a lot. I think he's going to be an interesting arm going forward, but you're right. This is just the price that I think the team needs to pay for all those years of, you know, spending a lot of money on the roster in order to make it competitive today, making some trades to make them competitive today. But now it seems like they're out of money, they're out of talent, and probably going to be out of wins this year.
Yeah, and I like Candelario as well. I think that was an interesting gift for them. And also they have Victor Reyes, who, you know, as longtime BP readers know, has big feet. So, you know, maybe there'll be some goofy and gallant style stuff with him and Alexei Amarista, who does not have big feet, doesn't have big anything. So looking forward to that. But otherwise, it's going to be a long year in a lot of these central cities.
Yeah, for sure. So the Twins have improved themselves. I think that Lance Lynn might end up being the guy, because, I mean, I just have no idea where he's going to end up at this point. You would think that it has to be, just like you said, Milwaukee and Minnesota are going to get two out of three of the big remaining starting pitchers available. But, you know, just this kind of the same way that the Twins vultured up Logan Morrison, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a team that doesn't have the same kind of powerful need for a starting pitcher that may just see an opening to get a really good deal and kind of strike first and get one of these starting pitchers. And it may leave one or two or both, you know, one of the Brewers or the Twins or even both of them kind of out in the lurch, while, you know, somebody else smart maybe comes in and picks up Alex Cobb for what, 3 years and $40 million or something crazy like that.
That would be a very Billy Bean thing to do, right? Just kind of vulture someone at the very end with an eye on trading him either at the deadline or next winter. Because, I mean, you know, the A's could definitely justify it. I think they have the lowest payroll in baseball. Or if not, they were very close to it. And, you know, it wouldn't hurt that team to have a veteran starter. Actually, it would be very fun to see them do that with Arrieta. But I think realistically, a Cobb or a Lynn would be more likely, so...
Yeah, to me, it's really Alex Cobb that seems like the guy for the A's if they were going to make that move. The other team that I was thinking about is, you know, speaking of teams that vulture late in the game, the Orioles are famous for going really late into the offseason and making their moves, and they certainly still have a hole. Again, you know, Arrieta is probably, I won't say probably, is completely out of the picture for them. I think that's, you know, one of the least likely reunions in all of baseball that you would see. But I could certainly see them going in and getting Lance Lynn and finally saying, okay, we'll move Gabby Ynoa to the fifth spot or the bullpen at some point.
Yeah, and they should do that, because why not? You know, why rely on I mean, we went through the Orioles rotation a few times already, and, you know, they need help still. Yeah, if you're going to make this a big year, if you're going to make this, you know, your last hurrah with this core, make it your last hurrah. Don't go halfway in. No one likes a halfway planned party. You know, you got to go all out. Yeah, the Orioles should do that. And honestly, I keep looking at the Giants, and I know they're right there at that CBT, and they're not going to go over it logically and all that. But I keep thinking, wow, imagine if you added one of those starters to this rotation. Suddenly, this team looks pretty complete instead of, you know, having both Stratton and Histon or Ty Block. That's who's also taking that spot. And it's like, really? You're going to go with Ty Block? This is like your big year, you know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of these teams, they're annoying me because it seems like the logical move is right there to be made, and they're not doing it for reasons that are frankly kind of silly, because I think the luxury tax stuff is really overblown. When you sit down and do the math, it's not the big penalty that they make it out to be. It's really not. It's like, I think the Dodgers would have been like $12 million over if they had went out and signed – excuse me, $12 million taxed if they had went out and signed some guy – and $12 million sounds a lot to us normal folk, but to these teams, $12 million is nothing.
Yeah.
So it's just frustrating.
I completely agree with you. And the team that I think of, you think of the Giants when you're thinking of a team that's, you know, kind of on the cusp and really, you know, would benefit from one more move. The team that I always think of when I think of that is the Nationals. They, you know, they get Scott Boras to agree on a Jake Arrieta deal. They go ahead and give a little bit of money to Jonathan Lucroy to play catcher. And all of a sudden, I think we're talking very differently about the Nationals as kind of this team that can really compete against the other juggernaut teams in the National League. But what do I know? I mean, like, I think that it would be, you know, you talk about the last hurrah for the Orioles. This might also be the last hurrah for the Nationals. So if it were me, I would go all out and then, you know, probably lose in the NLDS, but at least you'd stand a little bit more of a fighting chance. And, you know, a lot can happen between now and the deadline. And, you know, these teams may try to acquire this kind of starting pitcher on the trade market before then. But yeah, it's just, it seems like you're not going to get a deal as good as the one available for, you know, Cobb or Lynn or even Arrieta in free agency some other time. This is pretty unique, this situation.
Yeah, and I will say with the Nationals, I think they're going to be okay. I don't think they're going to be necessarily great heading forward, because I do think there's enough depth there. And I think with Victor Robles and potentially down the road, you also have the guy whose name I'm blanking on here, Soto. There we go, Soto. So
yeah, he's got to stay healthy, but he could be great.
Yeah, and he's only 19, so, you know, realistically, you don't want to put too much on him. But I think we almost have to compare maybe the Twins situation to what the Nationals had entering last year with their bullpen, where we all knew they got to go get some relievers. The difference is the Nationals were still clearly the best team in the NL East, and there wasn't going to be much in the way of a division race there, whereas the Twins, every win's going to count to them basically out of the gates, because – you know, you have the Angels hanging around there. You have the Red Sox or Yankees, whomever isn't winning that division. You have teams like the Blue Jays and, you know, the rest of the American League West, because you have to figure the Mariners are probably going to be in the race most of the year. If you're high on the Rangers or the Athletics, which you probably shouldn't be too high on either of those teams based on their obvious flaws there, but, you know, maybe they could have one of those seasons where they hang around 500 for most of the year and they're only two or three or four games back. And I don't know. I would just say that I think the Twins are probably positioned well where they can wait till the deadline. I just don't really like that approach when there are these options available to them at seemingly reduced cost.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you completely. So we'll go ahead and move on to our batting practice section. We'll talk a little bit about some of the other minor moves. One of them we actually very briefly touched on when we talked about the Tigers, and that's the Tigers bringing in Francisco Liriano to be, I don't know, maybe their fourth starter, which is really crazy to think about. It's going to be a short-term deal, 1 year and $4 million, but I, you know, in a year where we keep talking about, man, these contracts are so low, they're not what I expected, I kind of expected Liriano to come into camp on like a minor league deal or something really inexpensive given how bad he was for the Astros at the end of last year. But he's getting a full four-year contract, a $4 million contract, which is, I don't know, it's a little surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been an effective big league starter since 2015, and he's in his mid-30s, and I mean, his calling card was always that he was a little wild, but he could miss so many bats that it wouldn't matter. He's not missing the same amount of bats as he used to. His strikeout rate was actually under 8 last season, 8 per 9 to be clear, which that hadn't happened since 2011. And that was right before he began that, you know, run where he was shipped to the White Sox. Then he signed with the Pirates, and all of a sudden he was good again. And this guy is very inconsistent. I don't really like counting on him. If you're a playoff team, the Tigers have nothing to lose. I mean, they're going to lose games anyway, so might as well give – actually, you know what? That's why they probably did this deal, because he he gives the illusion of trying, because he's a veteran name, you know, a former All-Star, two-time Cy Young vote recipient, and yet he is so bad that he's probably going to cost them games over signing, I don't know, your generic – I don't know. I don't even know have a name in mind. Like Wade Miley seems like he'd be an upgrade over Francisco Liriano. And I know Miley signed to NRI elsewhere, but that's basically the only strategy I will ascribe to this move, is they know he's bad and they're just hoping he's so bad that, you know, he costs them games rather than inadvertently helping them win games that they don't really want to win.
Yeah, he feels a little tanky. I agree with you. But I also don't think he's going to be long for this rotation. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Daniel Norris eventually makes his way back, and, you know, you've got some other guys who could, you know, perhaps be more of a part of this team's future going forward. And then at the same time, it's possible they trade Michael Fulmer, and then, you know, who knows? The ace of your rotation is, I don't know, Matt Boyd. So then it's full tank. Then you're talking like 50 wins, I feel like. So
that's galaxy brain right there. Like if the Tigers rotation was a meme, you'd have Fulmer as your normal brain, and then you'd have Matt Boyd as like the universal brain or whatever. My goodness, Detroit. What has happened to you?
Yeah, it's not good in Detroit, which you can apply to both baseball and plenty of other non-baseball things, as a former resident of Michigan, I can attest. Let's move on, because it's making me sad to talk about this. Instead, we'll talk about Sungwan Oh, who we thought was going to join the Rangers, but didn't because of medicals, and now he's going to join the Blue Jays, we think, on a one-year and $2 million deal. I think since we've kind of talked about him before, we don't have too much to say about this, but it's a relatively low-risk deal for a guy who was once effective in 2016, wasn't very good last year, but it's the Blue Jays, and they can use the help, right?
Yeah, and I kind of wonder how much the ball affected him, because he's a guy who doesn't really have blow-you-away stuff, but he likes pitching up in the zone, and that seems like a bad combination when the ball is hopping around the park like it was last season. You know, their bullpen... it's kind of interesting. We talked about before, they have a bunch of guys you haven't really heard of. You know, Carlos Ramirez, Danny Barnes, Matt Dimoti. He feels like he could slot into there. I don't know. Well, I guess he did get a big league deal, didn't he? So, yes, he's probably going to slot in there. And I could see him being perfectly fine. I think he's probably more interesting than John Axford and now Albuquerque are in 2018.
Oh, my.
But yes. I'm rooting for Craig Breslow to make that bullpen, because I think that'd be a fun little story. And supposedly he's dropped his arm slot lower than it was last season, and I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if the Blue Jays have televised the game that he was in, but I meant to look for that, and I haven't seen it. But, you know, I always like the weird arm slot guys, so I'm rooting for that one. Sorry, oh, I guess you just got your – that's not a good sign when your segment is hijacked by Craig Breslow.
Yeah, right. That is a little sketchy. I feel bad for the guy now.
Yeah, so – the failed MRI is nothing compared to this indignity. So.
Right. Yeah, it just keeps getting worse for the poor guy. So we'll let him be for a little bit. The next moves that I want to talk about, we have one more major league-ish move. It's not really what I would call a big major league move, but it's a move. JT Chartrand is going to be heading to the Dodgers. The Minnesota Twins needed to set him free in order to make a roster spot, and they are going to have to deal with the Dodgers picking him up. The Dodgers picking up somebody on waivers is something that happens, I think, every 3 days. I don't know how long he's going to be for this team, but do you have any thoughts about him and his potential as a reliever? Because I saw a little bit of Minnesota Twins Twitter was kind of disappointed by this move. They thought he could have been an integral part of the bullpen this year, even with the additions that they made. So I don't know. Is there something to like about Chartrand, or is there, you know, he also was picked up by the Dodgers. The Dodgers had the final waiver claim. There was nobody ahead of them since he was an American League player, and they were the best team in the National League last year. So it's kind of interesting that nobody else had interest in him but the Los Angeles Dodgers, who picked him up.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because, I mean, we've talked about so many of these Dodgers waiver claims, and they usually fit the same profile. It's usually, oh, he's got a riding fastball and, you know, stuff like that, where it's almost always based on the idea that his spin rate is really good with his fastball, and maybe they'll have him pitch up in the zone because they have everybody pitch up in the zone and so on and so forth. That's not the case here. He actually does not have a rising fastball. He has more of a – it's not quite a sinker, but, you know, the vertical movement is not there like they usually like. That said, he throws in the upper 90s. He has a slider that I believe generated a good number of whiffs last season. And yes, it was over 43% whiffs per swing. So that tells you it was pretty effective. And, you know, he's been a guy who, if you follow the Twins at all, has been, you know, around seemingly forever.
Right.
Has a lower arm slot. You know, he's not an over the top guy. It's like a three quarters, I think. And I don't know. I kind of like this because, you know, what is there to dislike? You get a guy who has, you know, stuff potentially to be an interesting reliever on a waiver claim late in the off season, you know, early in spring training. You in theory can store him in the minors and wait for the appropriate time to, you know, unshelf him or, you know, deshelf him or whatever and put him in there. You know, he's had success in the minors too, as a thing. Like, this guy is, I mean, I don't know, he seems like a good waiver claim, and I'm kind of shocked that he got to the Dodgers because he seems like a guy who a number of teams could use. You know, he barely has any service time, so you're not talking about a guy who's going to get expensive anytime soon. If you're Tampa Bay, if you're Baltimore, if you're, I mean, we can keep listing teams off here, but I'm kind of curious why they didn't take a shot on him, because yeah, I don't really get it. To be clear, he wasn't great during his big league look last season. Strikeout to walk ratio was under 1.5. ERA wasn't flashy or anything, but still, it seems like an interesting guy to have on your 40 man, even if he's not on your 25 man to begin the season.
Yeah, I think it's got to have something to do with his injury issues. I mean, he barely pitched last year because of the injury issues. When he did, he was broken. So I do kind of see why the Twins might not want to carry him on the 40 man. The one thing that I think will end up being interesting is, you know, if he's going to end up spending serious time in 2018 on a disabled list, well, the Dodgers are a pretty good team to spend that time on the disabled list for. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. Like you said, his production in 2015 and 2016 in the minor leagues was so good that you would think that he would be someone who teams would have more interest in. But, you know, the kind of stress reaction in his elbow that he had, I mean, I could understand that scaring teams off, and he's not exactly a prospect level age guy. He's, you know, 27 now, so I don't know. It's interesting, but I wouldn't be surprised if this isn't the last we hear of him.
Right, future Chaz Rose of America.
So. Oh man, this poor Chaz Rose podcast. I feel bad for everybody listening. We have a little bit of breaking news that I want to talk over really quickly before we get into the rest of our planned minor league transactions that we're going to talk about. There's a small tweak to the JD Martinez deal. Before, we had understood that there was going to be two opt-outs in his five-year, $110 million contract with the Red Sox, which has just become official. It looks like he'll actually have three opt-outs in his contract. So he has opt-outs after the second, third, and fourth year of his five-year contract. I think it's interesting. I don't think it really changes much about the value of the deal, but that's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, that is very interesting. I don't know what to make of that without thinking about it a little bit more. But, you know, I thought, honestly, when you were going to – I thought you were going to introduce the A.J. Griffin signing.
There's okay. No question I will.
I don't know. I might have more to say about Griffin at this point than the opt-out, but that's interesting that that's the case. As for Griffin, whoa, you want to talk about somebody who was affected by the ball. I mean, my goodness, not that he was ever great to start with, but wow, he really got walloped last season, didn't he? Allowed 2.3 home runs per nine. Then again, he allowed 2.1 the year before, so maybe it's not all the ball. I remember him when he first came up. It was kind of fun to watch his curveball, and you know, he had the whole goggles thing, and it was, you know, it was fun. And now I feel like it's not fun to watch him. And nope. If they send him to Vegas,
one of the worst Woo. Pitcher's parks in all of organized baseball. You know, you think pitching in Texas is bad. It's much worse to try to pitch in the quality of hitters isn't very good in the PCL and AAA, but man, that's going to be a rough go of things.
He's going to have maybe the saddest age 30 season of all of baseball if they leave him in Vegas all year.
Yeah, the one thing that I would look forward to if I were AJ Griffin is by signing with the Mets, you can safely assume that the Mets are going to have three or four more starting pitcher injuries between now and the start of the season. So it's possible he comes out of spring training as the number four guy in that Mets rotation. I mean, it's, you know, Zach Wheeler will spontaneously combust and Matt Harvey will get eaten by sharks. And, you know, we'll eventually, Steven Matz will continue to be injured. So we'll eventually have AJ Griffin fifth starter for the New York Mets this year.
Well, that's very depressing. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the Reds signing Ben Revere to a minor league deal. I didn't really expect the Reds to add another outfielder because they have Billy Hamilton, Jesse Winker, Adam Duvall, and Scott Schiebler. They also, in theory, have Irvin on the bench. Revere, a few years back, was, you know, kind of a second division-ish center fielder who got by on his speed and D. These days, he hasn't hit since 2015. He's now entering his age 30 season. Doesn't really seem like a guy who's going to end up cracking their big league roster unless it's as a reserve who basically never plays, because I don't think you're going to play him over any of the guys I just listed. Probably going to spend the year in the minors. I really don't have anything else to add here. It seems like a kind of a sad conclusion to Ben Revere's prime, but
he was a bad hitter last year, but he wasn't a terrible hitter last year. The thing about Revere that's so interesting is, you know, he was worth almost half a win in base running runs, which makes me think that maybe the Reds will just kind of hang on to him and hope to deal him for like a C prospect at the deadline to a team that needs some speed on the base paths, or like, you know, in August trying to get him over to a team that may need like a pinch runner on their 25-man roster for the playoffs or something like that. But the thing about Revere that always makes me crazy is that he's so fast and he's a good base runner, but he's a bad defensive player. And he has been for a while now. And like, he's not even that good in a corner outfield position, much less center field. So it's really hard to find a regular spot for this guy. And like you said, he's basically Billy Hamilton without the defense, which is basically like saying that you're a replacement level player. So I don't see him getting any run with this team. The Reds have talked about basically running a four-man outfield rotation between the guys that you mentioned. And yeah, Revere's probably going to hang out in AAA, and you know, there are worse places to play regularly than Louisville. That's a fun stadium and a decent city, so good for him. But yeah, I don't see much else going on there.
Speaking of not much going on there, Pedro Alvarez is back with the Orioles again. Another minor league deal. He spent last season mostly in AAA, where he posted on base percentage below 300. Probably not the way to work yourself back into the majors when you're a bat only player. I don't think he's going to spend a ton more time in the majors this season, which is unfortunate because, you know, just a few years ago, this guy was an above average hitter, a consistently above average hitter, just one who didn't really have a defensive home. And now it seems like he's kind of regressed into a quad A guy. And I don't even know if you can call him a quad A guy because, again, you're not even hitting in AAA. Where are you going to hit at this point?
Korea. You're going to hit great in Korea. And that was actually one of the things I was looking forward to this season, is seeing him sign a deal to go play in Korea or maybe even go play in Japan. And, you know, he hit a ton of dingers last year for Norfolk, which is great. He can provide some value to a lower division team, but I don't think he's a major leaguer anymore, just like you said.
El Toro es no bueno. I think we can move on to Matt Belisle signing a minor league deal with the Indians. We talked about them a little bit with Carlos Torres last time out, how they could potentially use just a vet arm who kind of pitches those low leverage situations. A few years ago, Belisle was one of my favorite under the radar relievers because it felt like every year he was good in Colorado, which is not something a lot of pitchers can say. And, you know, he had kind of a rubber arm thing going on. Was really waiting for him to, you know, break away from Colorado. And then we went to St. Louis and got hurt immediately. Went to Washington, had a good year, albeit an abbreviated one, at least from, you know, the surface level perspective. I know his strikeout rate has never really been that high. And then last year, his strikeout rate went up with the Twins, but so did his walk rate and some of the other metrics there. So, you know, he's basically a kind of typical end of career non-elite reliever where he can give you innings, he can give you okay peripherals, but you don't really want him pitching in important situations. Basically, he's Carlos Torres' older brother. You know, either way, you slot them in as one of your last guys in the pen, and they're going to finish games for you, but not games that are particularly close or that you're winning.
Yeah, his stats from last year are actually very, very good if you look at Baseball Prospectus's DRA metric. 3.47 DRA, which gives him about a win of value from last season. So that's definitely something to hang your hat on. But at the same time, he had a very low batting average on balls in play last year. One might say unsustainably low. And so I don't, you know, it would be silly to try to expect that a 38-year-old pitcher would be able to repeat last year's pretty solid performance with the Twins. But at the same time, you're right. He's probably an upgrade over, you know, guy X as the seventh reliever. You know, would you rather have him than Dan Otero? Would you rather have him than, I don't know. Well, not Dan Otero, but maybe Evan Marshall, maybe Carlos Torres, maybe Alexio Gondo. It looks to me like the Indians really prioritized adding fringy, could be good NRI relievers, which is something that they've done multiple times over the past couple of years. It's how they got Otero in the first place. So I think that this is kind of a pattern with the Indians, and that makes it interesting. But Bilal isn't all that interesting himself, I guess.
Speaking of uninteresting veteran arms, we go back to Cincinnati, where Oliver Perez rides on with a minor league deal. And there's got to be a lot of good Oliver Perez stories in your memory bank. Don't really want to hear them because I know how depressing that's going to get. Does this guy have any chance of pitching significant time for the Reds following a couple seasons in Washington that were wholly unmemorable for various reasons?
Yeah. I kind of think so. Anytime you've got a pitcher who's still able to strike out more than 10 guys per inning, yeah, everything else is going to – that by itself will get you a job. His control is bad. His home run rate is not particularly great. He gives up a lot of runs. But if you can keep getting those whiffs and you're the Reds bullpen, which last year was one of the worst in history – oh, no, I'm not going to be surprised if he's the second lefty out of the bullpen come opening day and ends up making 60 appearances for this team as the kind of situational lefty who, you know, gets blown up once every four times he comes out there, but looks sharp in one out of those four and does the job fine in the other two.
And I think that just hollers for a transition to another lefty who can, quote unquote, get them whiffs. Kevin Segrist signed a minor league deal with the Pirates. I think there's plenty to like here. It wasn't too long ago he looked like he could be a perfectly good setup man. Fell out of favor in 2017. Still struck out nearly 10 batters per nine. He is entering his age 28 season. If you're the Pirates, why not, right?
Yeah, I think Kevin Segrist is the rich man's Oliver Perez at this point. You know, 10 years younger and has a more recent track record of success. I was really high on him a couple of years ago. And, you know, if you know the Pirates have this reputation for rehabilitating guys, so yeah, why not take a flyer on this one? But I would rather have him than Oliver Perez. That's not saying a lot, but I really like Segrist as an NRI.
Yeah. And moving on, the Minnesota Twins, who we talked about at length earlier, added Eric Ibar on a minor league deal. Not quite sure he fits in unless it's just an bench role. He spent a very, very forgetful season in San Diego. And prior to that, had a pretty ineffective year split between Atlanta and Detroit. So it's really been a number of years since he's been a productive everyday player. I guess, you know, slot him in for his veteran leadership on the bench, or maybe he'll accept I can't see this guy in AAA. I can't see that, but well, maybe. I don't know. Some of these guys surprise me with their willingness to go to AAA, but I have to feel like if he doesn't make the big league bench, that he's going to be granted his release and he'll just, you know, go and retire or something, because it'd be kind of sad to see Eric Ibar in the minors at this stage of his career.
It would, and I don't think he should go to the minors. I think he's a decent enough big league regular. The problem is that the Twins have plenty of guys. Between Eduardo Escobar and Jorge Polanco, they really don't need a third guy who can play shortstop on this team. But that having been said, something weird happened with Ibar last year, and he wasn't bad. His defense ticked up as far as the advanced metrics go, and that's fine. That's going to be something that's variable. He does not have a good defensive reputation anymore, and he has some truly awful defensive numbers in his ledger. But he started walking like crazy with San Diego last year, which is something that's never been part of his game. And it made him kind of an effective hitter despite hitting .234, which is a lower batting average than he ever has hit, just about. I think he's fine. I was doing some research on the Padres, a couple of days ago for a piece that's out at Baseball Prospectus now, and I was honestly very surprised at how well he seemed to do for them last year in somewhat limited action. He's probably an okay stopgap for some teams.
You think so? Because I don't know. You said walk like crazy. His walk rate was 7.6%.
For
That
Eric
would
Ibar,
ju
that's
which
huge.
is no, you're right, but that's still below the big league average. And I don't know. I remember it was a Bill James who said sometimes when you see an old player's walk rate spike, you should actually be very concerned because it means they know they can't make good contact on the pitches they used to, so they're being a little bit more patient than they used to be. I don't know how much truth is in that. I don't know. Sometimes these guys, in theory, could just, be improving their plate discipline or what have you. But I don't think I'd want him as my stopgap. I don't know. I don't really see a lot of value to him. I know you mentioned, the defensive numbers. They are what they are. Usually, a guy in his mid-30s does not get better at playing shortstop. So I'm gonna guess that that's more of a blip, or maybe, a credit to Andy Green's defensive positioning or whatever. For reference, defensive run saved actually had him at -4, which is slightly better than he was in 2016, but kind of in line with what he had been late in his Angels career. So I'm going to guess he's a below average fielder at shortstop. I didn't see a ton of him last year because once I was watching the Padres, I had better things to do than focus on Eric Ibar. But he's also a below average hitter, and I think he's okay as a bench and fielder with, the veteran presence and all that good stuff, but I don't think I'd want him starting or playing a lot of the time. That said,
Okay,
the
wait.
Tigers could have put him at second base
I
and
was literally just going to ask you, would you rather have him or Dixon Machado as your starting second baseman for the Detroit Tigers?
I would go with Ibar because at least I have the no, because at least then, in theory, you're not trying to win games, but you're trying to appease some of your fans by giving them a guy who is a former All-Star, a former Gold Glove winner. You can, write the spring training fluff story about how he's going to take Jose Iglesias underneath his wing, which granted, Jose Iglesias is a little too old for that, I think, at this point.
Right.
But, you can write the fluff story like that. Whereas Dixon Machado just seems like you simply do not care. You don't care about optics. You don't care about any of that. And, with one injury to Iglesias or Machado, you're running out some really, really bad, bad baseball. I mean, they don't, like I said, they don't even have an interesting NRI in camp at shortstop or second base. One injury, and they're running out a Rule 40, maybe less than a Rule 40 player at
Oh, I
one of
think
those
you're talking about a Rule
positions.
3. I think you're talking about a really, really sharp decline. I think you're talking about a guy who's, well below replacement.
Yeah, I think that's the case, and that's really rare to see out of the gate. You have to be pretty. Oh man, that's going to be an awful team.
Like you talk about, not being able to hit. Alexi Amarista can't hit. Pete Cosma can't hit. And those are the guys who are going to be playing ahead of behind Dixon Machado.
That's
Last one,
depressing.
last
That's
move,
depressing right there.
less depressing news, I think. Personally, I see this as a slightly fun move is that Michael Saunders, after signing a contract with the Pittsburgh Pirates, immediately was displaced by Corey Dickerson. But don't worry about him because he has latched on with the Kansas City Royals. The Pirates cut him loose at his request, I understand, and now he gets to get in the mix for the Royals, where I think he stands a better chance of getting a major league job, than he did in Pittsburgh.
We just talked about him last time, and I
I
said I didn't really
know.
know where he fit in, and because, of all the changes, and yeah, I I'm surprised Kansas City did it because they're another team who seemingly taking this winner off, to put it kindly. But he seems like a decent enough addition. It's kind of hard to believe it. You know, just a while ago, we were talking about how brilliant the Phillies were for signing him to that one-year deal. And, you
oh,
know,
man.
That did not work out. And, well, okay, that's being pretty kind. But neither did the Blue Jays bringing him back. That really didn't work out either. And that said, you know, in 2016, he was very good. And yeah. It's totally possible as he enters his, what, age 31 season, I think it is, that he can be good again, or at least decent again, and maybe he gets spinned at the deadline. I don't really know, but I don't mind this move whatsoever, and I'm glad that Saunders isn't buried on the depth chart because, you know, his team acquired a much better outfielder like hours after his contract dried. Can you imagine being his agent and seeing the Corey Dickerson trade pop up on your phone or whatever and being like, oh, I have to call him now?
Yeah, right.
Like that... Saunders...
That is a rough go of things. I, you know, it's funny because I look at the Royals roster, the way it's currently constructed, and I'm like, this guy's going to start against right-handed pitchers. Because yeah. The way that they're currently constructed, it's an all right-handed lineup. Like, their left-handed depth is Alex Gordon and, I guess, Ryan Goins?
You know,
that's your left-handed bat off the bench is Ryan Goins. That's...
Hey, they had Billy Burns, too. He's a switch hitter. Show some respect.
No, I don't think so. So, yeah, you could definitely see a scenario where he spells Jorge Soler, who, you know, also is a guy who in 2016 were like, oh, cool, Jorge Soler. Now we're like, ah, Jorge Soler. Bonifacio in the outfield or Paolo Orlando, who are all right-handed hitters. So Michael Saunders may, in fact, be a regular for this Royals team next year. Make that of what you will.
Yeah, they had Tyler Collins and Cody Ash both in camp, so this is bad news for those two. But
Cody Ash feels like Michael Saunders felt when Chris Dickerson got signed, I'm afraid.
Exactly. And then Bubba Starling is still hanging around. That's impressive to me because I honestly had not thought about Bubba Starling in years. And frankly, they should just give him a run because of the name. I mean, you know, you tune into the Royals, you're like, this team's going to be bad anyway. At least let me take some enjoyment in hearing the name Bubba Starling three times in a game.
Couldn't agree with you more. So
Bubba Starling.
We will end on that mellifluous note. Thank you, RJ, for joining me as always today. If you want more DFA podcasts, you can find us on Twitter at DFA Podcast. You can email us at DFA@baseballprospectus.com. You can read RJ at CBS Sports MLB, and you can read me at Baseball Prospectus. So on behalf of the team, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.